Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 10th of August, 2015, the podcast that sings the body electric. This is your host, Shane Killian, and joining me again this week is Jim Goble. Jim, welcome back to the podcast.
Heidi ho there, friends and neighbors.
Let's dissociate the news of the bogus. And a lot of people have been talking about what the CEO of Gravity Payments, Dan Price, has been doing. He decided he was going to raise the minimum salary throughout his company to $70,000. And of course, all the liberals and progressives were just, you know, jumping up for joy about that, going, see, you can just do it. Well, turns out you can't. Even after cutting his own $1 million salary, it's still ending up to be pretty much a disaster. Everyone liked it at first, of course. The idea was he started off immediately raising everyone's minimum to $50,000, and then he was going to increase it by $10,000 until the end of December 2017 when it would be $70,000. But that might not be happening because some of his most valuable employees have started to leave the company.
No.
If only someone could have seen that coming.
Like every economist ever?
So one of the employees that's leaving told the New York Times that she was initially excited about the policy, but then she realized what was happening, quote, "He gave raises to people who have the least skills and are the least equipped to do the job, and the ones who were taking on the most didn't get much of a bump." Before leaving, she presented an alternative, a different way to raise salaries without all this perceived inequity, and they accused her of, survey says, selfishness.
Yeah, that's kind of the carry-all, just like disorderly conduct is to the police.
Yeah, and creating a nuisance. Now, of course, she was one on the higher end of the range. They say, okay, well, that's just the rich people complaining. Well, another one was on the lower end of the pay range. So he was initially excited. Yay, I'm getting a raise. But now he's not so hot on it. Quote, "Now the people who were just clocking in and out were making the same as me. It shackles high performers to less motivated team members."
Everybody's crying for the $15 an hour minimum wage. And like, you know, I worked in fast food low those years ago. And unless you're moving up and you're dealing with the money and the day-to-day operations of the thing, there's no skill required.
Yeah.
I worked at a McDonald's. Everything was on a freaking timer. All you need to know is how to turn a spatula and how to turn the temperature up to 350. You put the meat on the grill, boop, hit the timer. When it beeps, boop, turn it over. That's it.
It wasn't even that when I worked at Burger King, and this was like when I was in college, like 25 years ago or something, maybe a little more. You just put the burgers in one end of the conveyor belt. They just came out the other end. You put the fries in, you hit a button. It lowered it into the grease. It raised it up again.
Yeah. So there was less skill involved at Burger King than there was McDonald's. I demanded a raise. But I mean, look at what I'm doing now. I mean, I'm working for a major pharmacy company, unquote. So I guess you could accuse me of being in bed with Big Pharma. But if they get stuff raised to $15 an hour, minimum wage, the people that work at McDonald's will be making $5 an hour less than what I'm making.
Wow, yeah.
I don't see any of them loading software on AS400 systems. I don't see them programming firewalls. I don't see them loading software on handheld scanners or anything.
Yeah.
All technical stuff that I do, and suddenly they're making almost as much as I do? Let's look at this. If minimum wage goes up to $15 an hour, there is no way there can be a possible good outcome. Because, first of all, if you don't raise everybody else's wages accordingly, then your purchasing power is going to be a lot less because prices are going to go up. But the people that make higher wages, their wages aren't going up.
Their real wages might be going down.
Exactly. And let's say that everybody does raise the wages of people that are making more than $15 an hour and they raise them proportionally. Well, then the net effect is zero.
Yeah.
You just moved everybody up the scale. There's just no way there could be a positive outcome on this.
And what we're talking about here is actually known in economics as equity theory. And even if people aren't doing this consciously, subconsciously, people are thinking of what is going on with their job and with their pay as a ratio of inputs to outputs. So how much time do you put in? Are you the dedicated worker who, you know, makes sure to come in early and goes the extra mile? Do you have the skills? Do you have the experience? Are you paying off the student loan because you went to college to learn more about this stuff? Things like that. That's your inputs. And the outputs are your salary, your benefits, whatever recognition you get, job security, autonomy, all sorts of things. And in order for things to run smoothly, everyone's perceived ratio needs to be more or less the same as everyone else. When that gets out of whack, that's when you have problems, and that's what's happening here. So if you have two equally skilled employees who are paid unequally, then you have all of these problems. And man, this article on Forbes.com, talk about derailing the train at the last moment. They pointed this out and they said, quote, "This is why equity theory is also the primary reason gender and racial wage gaps are everyone's problem, not just those affected." And it's like, no, because as has been pointed out time and time again, when you account for all of the inputs and outputs, there really isn't a gap, and that's why it's not an issue, and that's why they have to try to make it one by making it such a political issue.
Several years ago, a CEO of a company got like a $17, $18 million in stock options as a bonus at the end of the year when everybody else in the company was complaining about all the cutbacks and everything. A person in this company figured it out how much it would have worked out to if everybody in the company got a portion of the money that he got in bonuses, and it only worked out to like $2,000 a year per employee.
I'd take it.
I mean, I'd take it too, but it's not a hell of a lot of money. It just, in the large scheme of things, and really depending on where you fall on the income bracket the way it is, that extra money might put you in a larger tax bracket, which means you wouldn't see the money anyway.
Yeah, and that's something else that people are noticing when they're getting, you know, more money, they're getting $15 now. Wait a minute, I'm paying more in taxes now.
To me, it makes more sense, instead of raising the minimum wage, of cutting out the withholding on these people in the first place, because they're getting it all back at the end of the year anyway. Now, some people brought up to me, well, you know, then they can't go at the end of the year and buy big ticket items. And I'm like thinking, they really need food and rent money first before they need to be thinking about big ticket items.
Right. And they can always save for the big ticket items.
Exactly. Really, income tax refund is nothing more than a savings account that accrues you no interest.
Yeah, you're giving the Treasury an interest-free loan.
Exactly what it is. You're the first person I ever heard brought that point up was Pat Robertson.
Wow. Milton Friedman talked about that several times.
Anyone who didn't see this coming with this issue with the president of gravity just did not have their eyes open. There was no way that this was going to succeed at all.
Yeah, because the other end of equity theory says that when you have two unequal employees that are paid equally, you still get the problem. And this also applies to raises. So if you're seeing all of these unskilled employees, they're all getting all these raises, and you're not getting a raise or not getting as much of one, you know, you might say it's irrational, but that's the way it works. That's human psychology.
At a job I used to work at, they kept saying, oh, you're doing a good job, everybody likes dealing with you, blah, 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 but you can't give you a raise. You haven't cured cancer. You can't walk on water. We can't give you a raise. 2 years in a row. And then I got fired because I wasn't caring anymore? Like, duh, 2 + 2 = 4.
Yeah. You end up firing people because they're not any good, or they end up quitting. You end up with this huge turnover, and it doesn't work out.
No, it does not. Well, not for the employee.
Yeah. Well, not for the company either.
Well, not in the gravity case, no.
Generally not when a company does that. Say, if you're tired of the promos in this podcast, well, the patrons got it early and with no ads or promos. Just go to patreon.bogosity.tv and donate at any level.
Hi, I'm Dave. You may recognize me from previous Bogosity episodes. However, I'm not here to talk about that. I'm also part of a podcast, the Superplex Brothers Podcast. Head on over to superplexbros.com. You can check out the podcast for video games and pro wrestling. We also have news, reviews, and editorials and all kinds of stuff just to talk about video games and pro wrestling and everything else that comes in between. So if you're into that, why don't you come check us out?
Okay, so we've talked before about ballot access. Election season is starting to crank up again, so this is starting to become an issue already.
Here we go.
One of the worst states in the country for this has always been Oklahoma. And there's also some goings on in South Dakota, and I believe you have some things to tell us about Illinois as well.
Oh, do I ever.
So we have the Libertarian Party, the Green Party, and the Constitution Party all joining forces in some combination or other in these places to basically overcome election rigging, which is what it is. That's what ballot access requirements are. If you can control who gets on the ballot, you can control who gets elected. You know, communist countries have shown that time and time again. We're a little more subtle. We winnow things down to two instead of one, but it's still... So in Oklahoma, you have a group called Oklahomans for Ballot Access Reform, and they have a joint campaign with state Greens and Libertarians to get both parties qualified, which they haven't been for 15 years since Harry Brown ran as a Libertarian and Ralph Nader ran for the Green Party candidate. They have not had a third party candidate on the ballot for president since then. So it's nice. Libertarians don't agree with Greens on a whole lot, but it's always been the case that we've had a good relationship, especially when things like ballot access issues. So the Oklahoma Libertarian Party said, quote, "We are proud to partner with the Green Party of Oklahoma in a campaign designed to boost the chances of both groups being recognized in 2016. By actively petitioning for both parties simultaneously, we say to the world that while our two parties may differ in terms of political ideology, we are not afraid for those ideologies to compete in a fair and honest marketplace."
You know, I've always said that the only way that there's going to be any equity brought to the whole electoral system is if the different parties got together, threw away all of their differences, because let's face it, we're all in the same damn boat on this. We have common interest, the Libertarians, the Greens, the Socialists, the Constitution Party, what have you. And so we can get these issues taken care of, because the way it is right now, we're all splintered all over. And if we get together, we can meet some of these dang ballot access requirements, which are really horrible. The article which you were reading off there is from the Opposition News Network, or if you see the bylines, I keep thinking it's the Onion News Network, but it's not. And they're out of Illinois, and boy, did we have some fun here last year. The two major parties, let me rephrase that, the two establishment parties only had to get 5,000 ballots statewide to get on, 5,000 signatures to get on the ballot statewide, whereas the third parties have to get 25,000 signatures.
Oh, yeah.
And not only that, but we had a shorter time frame in which to get them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, on top of that, we had to face challenges to every single signature. The Green Party only got the bare minimum, and so they got thrown off the ballot, and then they mounted write-in campaign at that point. The Libertarian Party of Illinois had 45,000 signatures, I think. We needed 25,000, and of course the Republican Party challenged like 30,000 of those signatures.
They do that.
Yeah, and if I went down to Springfield, Illinois to help with the judging of the signatures. And one of the election judges that were down there that I was talking to told me basically that this was just all a waste of time because he was convinced that we had plenty of signatures. And there were a lot of things that they were challenging. Things like where somebody signed the petition and then his family members did, but instead of writing the full address out, the family members just put ditto marks.
Yeah.
And they challenged all of those. Mm-hmm. There was one where a person wasn't in the quote-unquote the correct district or something, and you looked at the address that they wrote down versus what they were registered on the voter rolls, and it was a house next door. They were just over a property line, just over a fence, not even a street. And then they were challenging things that just didn't make sense. The upshot was is that I am convinced that they knew that we had, even with the challenges, enough signatures.
Well, of course they did.
The problem is then we had to waste our time and resources to challenge all of this stuff. What happened is that we have to spend our time and money, leaves us with no budget to mount a campaign. So then what happened after they challenged the signatures? We had to go up to Chicago. Now, I didn't take part in this because I only have X amount of vacation days. We had to go to Chicago, and they were challenging the petitioners, not the signatures, the petitioners. And one of my friends from the Libertarian Party of DuPage County, Brian Scott Lambrecht. Hi, Brian. He got the most signatures out of anyone in the state, and they challenged his residency.
Wow.
They challenged his residency because if they challenged it successfully, there would have been 4,500 signatures taken off of our petitions.
He couldn't just walk in and show them, like, his driver's license with his address on it. Yeah.
Well, he went into the courtroom, and he showed them the paperwork, his mortgage payments.
Yeah.
They were wasting the time. If he didn't show up, who knows how they would have ruled. He's a small business owner. He is, in this economy, especially in Illinois, most corrupt state in the union, thank you.
Yeah.
He didn't have the time or the money. He's a small business owner in Illinois. He doesn't make a whole ton of money. That's something else, too, is when I was down in Springfield, and I'm sure the case was probably similar when they were up in Chicago, they had paid operatives in Springfield to challenge the signatures. They bust in college interns. It was awesome working against the college interns. They just didn't care. They were getting experience. They didn't mount a challenge. But I was up against one paid operative of the party, and he was the one that challenged the ditto marks on the petition. And I guess the day before, I could only volunteer for one day. I guess the day before, there were three high ups, probably the highest ups in the Illinois Republican Party that were there. And they were so loud and boisterous and challenging everything and yelling that the election judges kicked them out of the facility.
Wow.
I mean, and then on top of that, when they failed to get us knocked off the ballot, they sent out a bunch of mailers accusing us of being paid by the Democrat Party to steal votes.
I think I remember that one. I think we covered that.
You may have. I don't know if I have the images anymore, but I did find it somewhere.
I remember, I think it was Indiana, where the Republicans were actually sending out, like, armed people openly carrying firearms, to petition signers.
No, that was Illinois.
Oh, that was Illinois.
That was Illinois. There was a district on the southern suburbs of Chicago, LSIP, where a local security firm, I'm not going to mention the name, but I have left negative reviews on their Facebook page.
I think we did mention the name, but I don't remember what it was.
It was Morrison.
Oh, okay.
The Morrison security firm in the south side of Chicago got money from the Republican Party of Illinois, and they hired armed thugs to go intimidate signers and petitioners.
Yeah.
Armed Republican thugs. And it was corrupt from the get-go. We filed several lawsuits, and of course, they're all stuck in limbo. And what happened with the Green Party, back when I had my my political podcast, I actually had the gubernatorial candidate, say that fast three times, from the Green Party on my podcast talking about it. And they ended up, as I said, doing a write-in campaign because the Democrat Party of Chicago was pulling the same bullshit against them as the Republicans were throwing against us. Oh, and money was piled into the Libertarian candidate from the Democrat Party, just like the Republicans were supporting the Green Party candidates. Figure that one out. But what happened, they wrote the write-in campaign in Illinois. To write a write-in campaign, you have to register with each individual elections board across the state and pay $25 to each of them.
Wow. That's even worse than North Carolina.
Seriously. I know Oklahoma's bad. I don't know how much worse it is than Illinois, but here...
Well, I know, like, in Oklahoma in 2012, there was that party, what was it called, America's Voice or something like that. They were the only third party who managed to get on the ballot. They ended up not having a national candidacy. And since Gary Johnson wasn't on the ballot, the Oklahoma America's Voice Party said, well, he could be our candidate. We'll put his name on there. And the Republicans took him to court and like, nope, you can't do it.
Oh, there was one other stipulation about in Illinois. Say, like, you only got a handful of people wanting to run for office. You can't do that. You have to run a full slate. Therefore, you get people running for office just to run for office. They might not be qualified. They might not want the position.
Just names on the ballot.
Just names on the ballot. And then, of course, by doing that, you make the third party look a heck of a lot sillier than the main party.
Paper candidates, as they're called.
Paper candidates, exactly.
Yeah, so it sounds like South Dakota is a similar situation to what you were talking about. What they had done was reduced by a month the amount of time that the Libertarian and Constitution parties have to collect and submit their petition signatures. But Republicans and Democrats still had the same amount of time.
Gee, there's a shock.
So the ACLU has filed suit on behalf of the Libertarians and Constitutions. They said, quote, the lawsuit filed on behalf of South Dakota's Libertarian Party and Constitution Party, challenges the section of the law that shifted the deadline for new parties to submit declarations to participate in primary elections backwards by 4 weeks. And their senior staff attorney, Stephen Pavar, said, quote, South Dakota's new deadline is anti-democratic. The new law makes it nearly impossible for anyone except the major parties to place party candidates on the ballot. The major parties have bent over backwards to unfairly squelch potential opponents. But when do they not?
You know, it occurs to me there should probably be a national standard for ballot access. But if you do that, who controls the national political scene?
Exactly.
Then the same bad rules are going to be rolled out nationwide. So what do? I mean, you got to do it on a state-by-state basis. But, I mean, some states are more receptive than others. There's no easy answer. We are outnumbered. And then you got the issue with debates, which is a totally separate issue, but no less important.
Yeah, just a couple nights ago, we had a debate between 10 Republican candidates. And yet, if they had a debate between more than 2 political candidates in the general election, oh, that's too many to handle.
Well, you know what? Be fair, 11 candidates if you count Trump's toupee.
Yeah, whatever animal had crawled up on his head that night.
Donald Trump is so offensive, even his toupee doesn't want anything to do with him.
Oh, you've been reading Bloom County, haven't you?
Actually, I don't like Bloom County. I came up with that myself, actually.
Oh, okay.
I never got into Bloom County. I was a Calvin and Hobbes guy.
Oh, so am I, but he started up Bloom County again on Facebook. And he just posts a new one every day. He's just doing it himself, I think.
I did see a couple of them. I have to say they're better than I remember them being. I do have to admit that. But there's no easy solution to this other than the fact that we, the third parties, don't have paid operatives. We have to take time off. Some of us in Illinois took days off that we didn't have. And then we didn't get paid at the same time, whereas all of the Republican candidates were paid.
Yeah.
Or not candidates, I mean...
petitioners.
We have less money to lose than they do. I mean, they can go all out however many millions they got. We're lucky if we have a $10,000 budget for petitioning and campaigning combined. And that's in a good year.
Yeah, and that's the design of this, is to make us empty our coffers trying to get petition signatures and trying to find all this stuff in court so when it comes time to actually campaign, we don't have anything left.
If you win, you still lose.
Yep. And then you got to do it all over again the next year.
Yep. If you've never talked to the head of your state third party, these are people that have daytime jobs.
Yep.
The head of the state party in Illinois, if I'm not mistaken, is an auto worker. Okay. He ran for governor a few years ago, and he's got so much on his plate between his day-to-day job and then running the party that I've heard in his voice how exasperated and worn out he is. It's not easy. We have it a heck of a lot harder than those bastards ever did.
Oh, but they're the ones who are for the poor.
Oh, of course. They're for the poor, and therefore they're pro-choice, except when it comes to a choice they don't like.
If you're on the Wi-Fi in a coffee shop or hotel, anyone on that network can get your traffic. Do you really trust all of those strangers? For that matter, do you really trust your ISP? A VPN can protect you from prying eyes, disguise your location, and even foil government censors. It's essential in this day and age, so go to vpn.pugosity.tv and you'll be taken to BoxPN. Starting at just $2.99 a month, you can get unlimited high-speed connections to VPN servers all over the world, and they don't log connections, so your privacy is assured. Traveling abroad, just VPN home, and don't worry about what those other governments are doing. Back at home, stop your ISP from traffic shaping and messing with the quality internet access you're paying good money for. You can connect from multiple machines at once, including your smartphone or tablet, and it supports all the secure standards, including OpenVPN and SSTP. Bypass sensors and surveillance with your own secure VPN connection. Go to vpn.pugosity.tv. All right, so one of the things that libertarians have been railing against for years is civil asset forfeiture. And this happens when you were not charged with a crime, but your car was used for a drug deal or something like that. We're going to accuse your car of the crime and confiscate the car. And so then what you have to do is go to court and prove that your car was innocent. And if you don't, you lose it forever. No charges, no trial, They just take it.
Some reason your description reminds me of an old, I think it was made for TV movie called The Car, about a demonically possessed hearse with no driver going around and killing people.
Or what was it, Christine?
Oh, yeah, and then there was Christine. Yes, yes. The car did it. I don't know about where anyone else lives, but from time to time, you're driving around Illinois, and then you'll see in some police department parking lot or at some state fair or just say no thing at a school or whatever, you'll see this shining black SUV. It says DARE on the side, and on the back, it's written, "This vehicle was taken from a drug dealer through civil asset forfeiture laws." There we go. I don't know about you, but I get really pissed off when I see that.
Yeah. Well, and you say drug dealer, it might have been someone. Your neighbor says she saw you with more than 3 ounces of pot, so we're going to call you a drug dealer and take your car.
I was watching an old episode of, well, it's redundant, an episode of Penn & Teller's Bullshit where they were talking about drug laws, and there was this guy who was disabled in a car accident, and the state was going after him for being a drug distributor because he had too much of his pain medication.
Yep.
And it was prescribed to him, and the amount he had was within his prescription, but the state still went after him. How is that fair? How is that equitable? This guy had no use of his legs thanks to a car accident, and he got thrown in jail.
But I mean, they have the incentive to do things like that because a lot of police departments pad their budgets with all of this. They take the cars and then auction them off, use the money or whatever. They'll take your house. They'll take whatever.
It's all about the Benjamins, baby.
So this story that I've linked to has a story from my home state of North Carolina. Lyndon McClellan, who owned a small convenience store out in a rural area of the state somewhere, the IRS seized his entire bank account of $107,702.66. And the reason why is something else we talked about before, because there is a rule that says that if you deposit $10,000 or more in cash, then it has to be reported to the authorities because obviously you're a drug dealer.
Oh, of course.
If you deposit just under that amount, then you're obviously a drug dealer avoiding the reporting requirements. So they said that, and they just took the money.
You know,
his entire life savings.
And in the article, it says that they still haven't paid him back the money. And I'm thinking back, I don't know if you've ever seen the show. I've been watching a lot of CNBC lately. They got some good shows on there. But the show I'm thinking about is American Greed. And they're talking about Ponzi schemes and that sort of thing and how, you know, they don't pay, you know, their investors because they don't have the money until they get the money from another investor. And that's kind of what this case sounds like, too, in a way. They don't have the money, and so they have to get it from someone else before they could give it to them. It's a Ponzi scheme. The whole, well, what in the government isn't a Ponzi scheme, I guess, but I mean, it's really ridiculous when the guy did not commit any crime.
Well, and if it's really out of the way for the owner of a small convenience store to be making a lot of smaller cash deposits.
Oh, God forbid. I worked at a convenience store and we made small deposits all day long. Granted, this was well before any of these insane laws are, I mean, because it was pre-9/11. But, my birthday, by the way. But still, I mean, convenience stores can make 1,000, 1,500, they do multiple deposits during the course of the day, but you know what? Sometimes you might not be able to get to the store for several days on end because, I don't know, maybe you're in Vegas at the big 7-Eleven convention or whatever, and you just can't do it.
Well, and of course, when this happened, he had to hire some expensive attorneys and paid an accountant to try and do all this. Now, he did get some pro bono help from the Institute for Justice, one of my favorite organizations.
Mine too.
He actually prevailed in court. The government has agreed to return all of his money. But here's the thing. There was an act passed in 2000 called the Civil Asset Forfeiture Reform Act. And it says that when you get this property recovered and it's found out that you did nothing wrong, the government doesn't just have to give you back the money or the property, but everything you spent trying to get it back, your attorney's fees and everything else. Well, guess what? They still haven't paid that. When they tried to give the money back to him, they said, well, you have to sign this document. He read the document and there was a waiver waiving his right to full recompense. And so he said, no, I'm not going to sign that. And so the next day, the U.S. attorney entered a motion in court to dismiss the case without prejudice. Now, what that means is if a case is dismissed with prejudice It's a, you got nothing, go away, never come back. Without prejudice means that, well, we're just hitting the pause button on it, but we might reopen it at a future date if we feel like it. Which would mean that they would get out of this requirement to pay him back because the case was still technically open. Now, it's clear that they don't have any intent to reopen the case because the IRS has changed their policy to stop doing this, thankfully. But until this happens, or until there's some sort of court action dismissing it with prejudice, which is what should happen, then it's going to be really hard for him to get his recompense. So Institute for Justice attorney Rob Johnson said, quote, "The government's gambit to evade its statutory obligations should not be rewarded. Having dragged claimants into 10 months of costly and unnecessary legal proceedings, the government should be required to make claimants whole." And they link to the whole document that I just quoted from, and man, you want to see how ugly the government can get, just read that thing.
What did I say on the last story, even when you win, you lose?
Yeah.
I mean, thank insert deity here for the Institute of Justice, but they're doing this pro bono. They're not making any money of it. If I was making more money, they would be the second charity on my list to receive a donation.
What's the first one?
Shriners Children's Hospitals.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, my son was helped by them. He was born with 2 club feet.
Ah.
And it was a big, big help to us. But as I said, even when you win, you lose. They're just stalling.
Well, and the thing is, we're talking about like $15,000 here, which is a lot for him. But government drops that much and doesn't think about it. And yet they're going through all this to avoid paying it back. It doesn't make sense.
The government drops that much money in a tenth of a second. Not even a full second. My numbers might be off. It might be 1/5 of a second. to appease the government people out there, I'm going to correct my number. To us, it makes no sense. To the government, it makes perfect sense because there's money. They're trying to get every dang penny they can because they know they're so far in debt that every little bit helps. You know what? If I'm walking down the street and I see a penny, I pick it up. I was reading an article in a magazine, in one of those straight dope books by Cecil Adams, where they figured out the amount of time it took you versus the amount of calories spent, and the action of picking up a penny is worth about making $7 an hour. So pick up that damn penny, you know? But the government is just trying to pick up, not just trying to pick up all of these damn pennies, they're trying to steal all the damn pennies from you. And when you are found in the right, they're trying to delay it so that they can make interest off of it, or just keep the whole damn thing.
Yeah.
And I'm worked up. You know what? Seriously, the Institute for Justice is probably the best libertarian organization out there when it comes to civil asset forfeiture. What's the other one? Eminent domain and
licensing laws, occupational licensing.
Licensing laws and all of that. They are fully for the small businessman.
Absolutely.
If you haven't checked them out, go check them out. IJ.org. Easiest URL.
This is the day I stopped watching the newsroom, was when he blasted the Institute for Justice for being Koch-funded and just hating the poor and being out for rich people.
Ugh.
I hated that.
Well, you know what? I guess prison reform is evil because the Koch brothers are fully behind that. Oh, and you should probably start hating Obama, too, because the Koch brothers and Obama worked on something recently.
Yeah.
It was about prison reform.
Oh, you know what are another couple of Koch-funded organizations? The ACLU and the United Negro College Fund.
No.
Yep.
Yo, and yes, did you hear about what happened with that?
A labor union that
a
said
labor
they were going to stop?
Yeah. Said that they will not donate to the United Negro College Fund as long as they get money from the Koch brothers. If my door wasn't open and my mother-in-law wasn't down there, I'd be saying some words that start with the letter F and end with the phrase uck.
You mean fire truck?
Oh, yes, that's it, exactly.
Hackers, terrorists, the NSA. But I repeat myself. Your online security is under attack, and the weakest point is your password. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers, backup sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications and even mobile devices, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.bogosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.bogosity.tv and get LastPass now. Okay, now this next one, probably not too much to cover here, just something I wanted to bring everyone's attention to. And this is from Matt Palumbo, from his book Conscience of a Young Conservative. It's an excerpt from it, which is available online for free. But we've talked about socialized medicine before, and one of the bogus metrics they try and use to show that universal healthcare is better than capitalist healthcare, which is what we don't have, but never mind, is life expectancy. And I've debunked this myself several ways, just because there are so many different factors that go into it, and there are so many things other than life expectancy, you know, that you can look at. And he points this out. Not only is this not the only way to measure how good a healthcare system is, it's actually a pretty bad measurement to use. So what he did was, he says, quote, "If nation A has a lifespan of 80 years and nation B a lifespan of 40 years, it would be reasonable to conclude that the healthcare of nation A is superior. However, when examining the difference in lifespan between first world nations, the difference is either by months or at most a few years. Factors besides medical care can affect the average lifespan by only a very small amount, but this amount is still enough to make us appear inferior from a statistical perspective." And he looked at four different factors where the U.S. ranks lower than other countries, and as a result, lower the lifespan statistic. So he looked at average lifespan. He looked at the murder rate per 100,000, the suicide rate per 100,000, the obesity rate as a percentage of population, and car fatalities per 100,000. And these numbers are pretty telling. I mean, we've got a lot of problems with obesity, car crashes especially. We're head and shoulders above everyone else.
Ooh, we're number one.
Yeah. Yeah, suicide and murder were actually pretty comparable with Cuba, which sounds really bad, but that is the one that Michael Moore was hyping up as a great example of socialized medicine. But he also talks about studies that have been done which show that when you account for factors except fatal injuries, the U.S., even though it ranks 19th in life expectancy and overall, you take out fatal injuries, it jumps up to number one. And it still ranks number one, even when you just account for car accidents and murders. So you take away those two things, it jumps up to number one.
You look at these issues, and they don't have to do with healthcare. They have to do with safety issues.
Yeah.
The obesity. We have more McDonald's and Burger Kings and whatever. And Lord knows that we probably could all eat less of that. But that's not a healthcare issue. That's not a medical issue. That's a personal responsibility issue. And car crashes, I mean, we're licensed. We're required to keep insurance. I was getting into a discussion on a local Chicago news thread, and they're talking about, you know, how bicyclists are crashing into cars and all of that. And me being an avid bicyclist, I was looking at this thread with interest, and people are like, well, bicyclists should be licensed and insured. And I responded, we license and insure automobiles. It doesn't keep the assholes off the road.
Yeah.
These are not medical issues. These are other issues. And our healthcare system is far from perfect. I mean, you're saying we don't have a capitalist system, and that's right. We have a corporatist system. We have an FDA that takes forever and a day to approve crap, and if there's an experimental medication out there that you willingly volunteer yourself to be a guinea pig for, government won't let you, even though it's your freaking body. We have big issues. We have huge government involvement issues with our healthcare. These issues that they're talking about, life expectancy, none of these are healthcare issues. As I said, they're personal responsibility issues. They're education issues. They are not healthcare issues.
Well, that just means we need government to educate people, right? Oh, wait.
Do not get me started.
So something else he did with the life expectancy issue is something I've been pointing out, particularly in the gun control debate, where they say, oh, look, here are two different countries that I've just cherry-picked for no good reason whatsoever, and one of them has gun control and has less crime and stuff like that, and I'm like, what you need to do is look at what happened to crime before and after the gun control law was passed in that country. And he does the same with average lifespan in countries before and after adopting a system. For example, the NHS in the UK was created in 1948, and all the 48 years of the 20th century up to that, life expectancy rose from 47 to 66 years. Without socialized medicine, a rise of 19 in real terms or a 40.4% increase. For the 48 years after the establishment, life expectancy rose from 66 to 77.5, a 17.4% increase. And granted, you know, once you're starting to talk about people getting older and older, it's harder to get those percent increases. But when you look at both periods in the U.S. showed similar increases during both periods.
Go figure.
So apparently, this increase in life expectancy doesn't have anything to do with socialized medicine.
And you're talking about the issue about guns. You know what? They have no guns in the UK. They still have high murder rates. You know why? They still have knives. There is a huge push in the UK right now to get knife control laws on the books.
Yeah.
They have knife buyback programs.
Oh, I forget what it was. I was hearing recently about another mass killing in a movie theater. Not with guns. This guy went around with a knife and he was stabbing or slitting throats or whatever, and I forget how many people he killed.
The Oklahoma City bombing in the United States wasn't done with guns. It was done with fertilizer and fuel.
The largest school shoot, we've talked about this before, the largest mass school killing in the U.S. was done in the 20s with, I think it was a fertilizer bomb. And the only reason he used a firearm was that was how he set it off.
There you go.
I mean, if he didn't have the firearm, he would just, like, lit a fuse or something.
I hate calling them liberals because there's nothing liberal about them, and I hate calling them progressives because there's nothing progressive about it. Unless you're a caring regressive.
There you go.
As I said, these are not healthcare issues. You're not comparing apples to apples. You're comparing apples to ham sandwiches. You're not even comparing them to oranges.
Yeah.
Now you can make Amazon purchases with Bitcoin by going to purse.bogosity.tv. That's P-U-R-S-E. Moreover, most purchases can be made at a discount. Save an average of 20% just by buying from Purse, or get even greater discounts by linking your Amazon wish list. Go to purse.bogosity.tv. Bogosity.tv is a participant in the Amazon Services LLC Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for sites to earn advertising fees by advertising and linking to Amazon.com. Just clear your cookies and go to Amazon.bogosity.tv, or check the right-hand side of the podcast page for Amazon's best deals, including the deal of the day and limited-time lightning deals on all sorts of great products. So next time you buy online, go to Amazon.bogosity.tv.
And now let's spoil the election for this week's biggest bogon emitter. And this week it goes to Hillary Clinton, who takes it this week for the first time, but I have a feeling it won't be the last, particularly if she gets the Democratic nomination. And yes, she's jumping on the overpriced and hyper-regulated bandwagon against Uber.
Shocking.
Yeah, and somehow this is getting called the gig economy. I'm not sure why.
Yo, because they're hipsters. They're just playing gigs.
Yeah. But she's talking about how to lift American workers out of poverty and saying that somehow Uber and Lyft and all of those are a bad thing because they dampen wage growth, despite the fact that her party's policies have resulted in this being the slowest post-recession job growth ever.
You know what? It really pisses me off. I was talking about my friend Brian Lambrecht of the DuPage County, Illinois Libertarian Party. As a part-time gig, maybe that's why they call it the gig economy. He's an Uber driver, and some weeks he makes more money than he does at his normal job.
Yeah.
Why do you want to take that away from him? Oh, because they're not regulated. You know what? When you're an Uber driver, you don't know when you're going to be going into bad neighborhoods. Taxi drivers have the luxury of not having to go into bad neighborhoods. If you're an Uber driver, you know what? You're going where the money is. I mean, and it doesn't matter where you are. You have less safety, but your people that are Uber drivers know what they're getting themselves into.
Well, you get the opportunity to say, no, I don't want to go that route. I mean, you don't have to.
You have that also.
You have that choice.
You don't have that luxury if you're a taxi driver or a bus driver.
But the problem is they don't have full-time benefits like healthcare or retirement savings. So that makes it bad.
I was going to ask the question, is Hillary clueless? But then I remembered she's a politician.
Yeah. So she said, quote, many Americans are making extra money renting out a spare room, designing a website, or even driving their own car. This on-demand or so-called gig economy is creating exciting opportunities and unleashing innovation, but it's also raising hard questions about workplace protections and what a good job will look like in the future. Okay. First of all, these aren't hard questions.
They're hard questions if the wizard didn't give you a brain.
Yeah. Second of all, workplace protections. Uber doesn't have workplaces. Well, I mean, I assume they have like a headquarters somewhere. But if you're an Uber driver, you don't have a workplace. You do it out of your home. It's your car.
Uber is carpooling where you take a couple bucks on the side. That's all it is.
Yeah, that's it.
And you know what? If we're going to go this route, then let's ban garage sales.
Yeah.
Because that's a gig thing. Not necessarily on demand, but you could put a sign up in your front yard and just sell shit out of your front yard whenever you wanted to. Oh, no, I'm sorry. In many communities, those are regulated now, and you have to have a business license. So maybe those are on the way to being banned. Oh, can she be even more clueless? You know why she's big on this regulation? Look who, I mean, she's just like every other politician. She's clueless. She thinks she's helping the little guy. In reality, all she's doing is she's helping the labor unions that are supporting her. But despite the fact that Bernie Sanders is getting more of the labor union money and Hillary's getting more of the mega financial institution money. But, I mean, come on. Let us make an honest buck. This is something else that the Institute for Justice is fighting against. There was a story that they did years back where there was just some teenager going around Phoenix building these little nets to put over people's chimneys, because I guess rats in Phoenix climb up the chimneys and go down. So he's putting these things on him. He was being told that he didn't have a license to do it, and so he had to get a license. This was a kid who was 18 freaking years old, and he didn't have a license. He wasn't regulated, I guess. I believe he won. The Institute for Justice has gone up for these people that are fighting against all of these regulations. In Louisiana, they went up against the hairdressers union because this one woman down there wanted to open up a hair braiding salon and that's all she was going to do. She still needed a freaking hairdresser's license. And it was like $5,000 for the classes and however many hours. How is this equitable? People that want to run a business don't have the money necessarily to start up a business. You know why companies like Walmart and that are for the minimum wage and for Obamacare? It's because they have the money to afford it. And don't think that they are not in support of it. Why else is Walmart making a big to-do out of the fact that they're raising the minimum wage for all of their employees? They were one of the largest proponents of Obamacare. They love the regulation because it hurts us. If I wanted to go out right now and start a business and say, like, maybe cooking barbecue or something, I couldn't do it because I don't have the money or the credit rating to get a loan to pay for all of the regulations. It's not fair to me. It's not fair to the little guy. But the Democrats are for the little guy, remember?
Oh, yeah. And they're also saying that, oh, these poor Uber drivers are being misclassified as contractors when they're really employees.
Oh, for the love of Al Gore.
And lots of them are suing Uber, and I think they're getting laws passed in California and
Chicago, I believe, is talking about taking action against them.
How are they not contractors? They don't have a workplace to go through. They choose which rides they want to give. They never really leave their home except to go on the rides. They use their own car.
Let's ban carpooling. Let's just do that. I mean, that's the next step. Carpooling is Uber without money or an app.
Here's what Clinton said, quote, I'll crack down on bosses that exploit, gotta love that word, exploit, employees by misclassifying them as contractors or even steal their wages. How are they stealing their wages?
I don't even get where that comes from.
It's like Uber says, okay, you take this fare, you go on this trip, and you'll get paid this much, and then you get paid that much. The only people I see stealing any part of that is the government! taxes.
You know what? I'm speechless. I'm sitting here trying to think of something to say, but I am freaking speechless on this. By trying to regulate Uber, trying to regulate people having garage sales, trying to regulate people doing business online, I'm going to be going down to Southern Illinois in 2 months here to go on a sponsored bike ride down there. I got an app on my phone called Airbnb,
yeah,
which is people just renting out a room or a bed for overnight. And I'm looking at that. When are they going to regulate that?
Oh, they're already talking about it. They're doing it in like New York and other places.
Because it's competition. You wouldn't want the donors to the political parties to have any sort of competition. There was a great parody political ad. I believe the guy's name, look it up on YouTube. The guy's name is Gil Fulbright. And he says, hell, I could be Phil Goldbright or Philip my mouth with farts. And
oh yeah, I remember that one.
To do these things, which the people want, I have to get money, which is provided by these people. And if there's a conflict there, well, my hands are tied. That's what it is. They're just appealing to their corporate donors. It has absolute, and when I say corporate donors, I'm including the labor unions, because they are big business, despite the fact that they say that they're not.
The Koch brothers wish they had as much to give as the labor unions.
The labor unions are all given to Bernie Sanders right now. So that's at least one thing we got going for us.
There's still a lot given to Hillary.
A lot, but most of the biggest donations are going to Sanders.
So all of that makes Hillary Clinton this week's biggest bogon emitter. History is written by the winners, and so apparently is economics. That's why there's LibertyClassroom.com. Probably the best single learning resource for history and economics on the web, LibertyClassroom.com teaches U.S. history, Western Civ, and economics from actual university professors. There's lots of free material to get you started, including introductory lectures on all these subjects. And when you sign up, you get the full site's content for just $99 a year, less than the price of 2 cups of coffee a month. And if you type in the promo code BOGOSITY in all caps, you'll get your first year for just $88. Lectures are available in both video and audio format, so you can watch or listen to them on your computer, your phone or tablet, or in your car. Learn at your own pace about the subjects you're interested in and become a more effective debater. You'll also get access to lots of supplemental materials and even the professors themselves via the discussion forum and even live video chats. Inform yourself against the myths and propaganda of our society. Visit LibertyClassroom.com. And now let's send to the end of the breadline this week's Oh, that was demonic.
Freddy Krueger.
All right, so enough talking about how the U.S. is screwed. Let's talk about how Venezuela is screwed. This week, we're talking about Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. And we've talked about this before. Venezuela and all these other South American countries are putting price controls on food, which, of course, leads to shortages and rationing, as it has every single other time it's been tried. But do they ever realize this and reverse their stupid policies? No. In fact, Maduro is saying that the lack of food and a recent supermarket riot is due to a United States conspiracy.
keep going with the story. I got a comment, but not quite yet.
All right. So basically, last weekend, the weekend before this podcast came out, there was a supermarket riot in San Felix Bolivar, and the Bolivarian National Guard responded and ended up shooting a 21-year-old man dead. And this has been corroborated by several witnesses. And what they were doing was they were rioting to try to get into a warehouse, not so they could get like all these expensive luxury items, not even so they could get like steaks. They were trying to get like milk and flour. That's how bad things have gotten.
And if I read the article correctly, didn't they pass some sort of law? They made it illegal to bring cameras into the grocery stores to put pictures out on the internet about how empty the grocery stores are.
Well, there's no official law on paper, but I guess, just like here, if we try to video a cop on duty, he can arrest us even though there's no law. That's what they're doing. They're confiscating telephones in supermarkets if someone tries to record footage of what's on the shelves, because there's lots of stuff like snacks and cookies, but there's None of the necessities, no milk or flour, vegetable oil, not even any laundry detergent or diapers.
You know, it's funny because I saw a bunch of the pictures and they were all empty except for the one picture that had bananas. There were bananas everywhere. So if you like bananas, you can go to Venezuela, I guess.
Yeah.
I was reading the article and they claimed Joe Biden was behind this.
No, they claim Joe Biden is plotting Maduro's assassination.
Joe Biden is the left wing's Dan Quayle. I mean, he can't. You thought Gerald Ford couldn't walk and chew gum at the same time. Joe Biden can't walk and bite his tongue at the same time.
But despite the fact that witnesses saw National Guard troops shoot the guy, President Maduro says the U.S. is behind it. It was planned by Americans, executed by Venezuela's battered left. Quote, you all know that a military general of the United States doesn't predict. He orders, and the battered Venezuelan right wing executes.
You know, when you dig yourself in a hole, you gotta always find yourself a boogeyman. Just like how the left here in the United States blames the Koch brothers and the right blames Soros. I mean, they gotta have a boogeyman down there too. It's always the U.S. Soviet Union, U.S. North Korea, the U.S. I mean,
oh, so much of this reminds me of the Soviet Union. Because I grew up, you know, in the tail end of all that. I remember all the Soviet propaganda. Listen to this bit. This sounds just like what the Soviets would say. Venezuelan officials are saying that the riots are not caused by the government's, you know, messing with the inventories and the inability to keep everything replenished or their economic policies or their rationings or anything like that. Instead, they're talking about outside agitators and saying that nobody is starving here, so there's no reason to riot, and that this is all staged for political purposes. That's exactly the kind of thing the Soviet Union said.
You know what? When all of this crap was going on in the Soviet Union, you know, nobody had anything to eat, anything, you know, there was the store shelves were empty. They kept getting these reports all the time about how crops are up, you know, and everything is up, but yet you don't see it reflected in the stores. The higher-ups in the Politburo, or whatever they called it, in the Soviet Union, had their own special floor of the Soviet department store where they could get goods from all over the world. They could buy Ford cars from the United States. They could buy caviar from France. They could buy anything. And I bet you 10-1 that the leaders in Venezuela aren't feeling any of this pain, but they gotta have somebody to fuel their lifestyle. So, you know what? Hillary Clinton and everybody is talking about, you know, off the backs of the worker, off the backs of the, you know, you're making profits. These corporations are making profits off the backs of the worker. The damn Venezuelan government's making profits off the back of the damn worker. And they don't freaking care as long as they've got their damn gravy train going. How come we're not talking about, well, we talk about it here because it's not our country, you know, let's get out our little flag and wave it. Yay, go USA. But, you know, other countries are evil when they do it here. You know, no, they're not evil. We care about you. We're protecting you. Don't you feel safe? I mean, it's, there's a lot of hypocrisy to go around on this. And I'm worked up again. Oh, jeez.
Meanwhile, Venezuela is suffering 615% inflation.
Nah, we can beat that.
Don't give them ideas.
Amateurs.
More quantitative ease. Now, there's some quantitative freaking easing there. You see that, Yellen? You gotta step up your game now.
Be careful what you ask for you just might get it.
And just before the riot, the Venezuelan government seized a distribution center that was used by Pepsi, Nestle, and a Venezuelan company called Polar, which dealt with the distribution of 12,000 tons of food.
You keep hearing stories about in Ethiopia and all over the world, but especially in Ethiopia, where they're sending tons of food to go help the starving people, but then the thugs intercept the food and keep it for themselves. That's what's happening in Venezuela. It's just that the thugs are the government.
Well, the thugs are pretty much the government in Ethiopia and everywhere else, too.
Well, true. I got your point.
Yeah, and so now Maduro's government is saying that the food producers have to send up to 100% of their output to the state-owned distribution centers. But the thing is, there's like 15 times more private supermarkets than ones that are state-run. So it's like the states wanting it all for themselves, and then the private supermarkets aren't going to be left with much of anything.
What, you mean the government wants a monopoly? Tell me that isn't so. The sarcasm is thick tonight.
But they're talking about, sarcasm's always thick around here, what are you talking about? But the thing is, this is not going to solve the shortage problem. And there's a problem with what they call bachaqueo. I'm probably not pronouncing that right. But it's people who buy this stuff and then resell it on the black market for a huge markup. And all this is going to do is just make that worse.
They don't get it. You know what? I say they don't get it, but I think they do get it, actually. Part of me thinks that they know exactly what they're doing. Honestly, right now, the one country to me that seems a lot like the novel 1984 is Venezuela. North Korea, I think, is close to that, but I think Venezuela one-upped them, because if you see all of the images there, look at the movie version of 1984 from the year 1984. Weird how that worked out. And look at Venezuela, and there's not much difference. This is what happens when you get an economy where everything is controlled by the government, where the individual has no say in what's going on, and then they're told that there's some nasty evil out there preventing them. So don't blame the government. Blame this nasty evil that they've probably never, not with given their education, doesn't even know exists.
And guess who they're blaming for it? Of course, it's the private sector. President Maduro says the private sector is waging an economic war, and that's why the country's in such bad shape.
There's a private sector in Venezuela?
Yeah, but they're not the ones waging the war. I think they're the ones war is being waged against by Maduro's government.
What did George Orwell say? Peace is war and war is peace?
Yeah, the Ministry of Peace made sure they were at a perpetual state of war.
Uh-huh. I need to read that again.
Oh, it's amazing. But yeah, there's something that I'm not even going to try to pronounce, but they're Venezuela's largest business union, just talks about how state intervention has just made everything in the private sector so horrible. And their head, Francisco Martinez, said, quote, "The vast majority of businesses have serious inventory problems and do not have the capacity to refill their supplies because they cannot sell and earn adequate profits." So at least a union somewhere gets it.
How old is this story? Just about a week or so?
Just a week. Well, the one I'm reading right now is like a couple of weeks earlier than that. But
okay.
But the first one we were at, yeah, that was just last week.
Okay. I ask because I wonder if the guy who just said all of that about blaming the private sector and how it's a bunch of crap, I wonder if he's still alive.
I don't know.
Yeah, you gotta wonder in a country like Venezuela.
Yeah, I mean, they're looking more and more like the Soviet Union every day.
Yeah, and I thought once, Chavez died that things would get a little bit better, but I thought that once Kim Jong-il died that things would get better in North Korea. You know.
Meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Who sang that? See what I did there?
Yeah.
It's a party.
But after all this time, some people just don't learn. And that's what makes Nicolas Maduro this week... Well, that wraps up this He Tried to Kill Him with a Forklift edition of the Bogosity Podcast. As always, you can come to forum.bogosity.tv to read the show notes and join the discussion. This podcast depends on you to keep going, so please donate using the links on the website or at patreon.bogosity.tv, and feel free to join in by sending a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. You can even stick it in an audio file if you want. Thank you for listening, and thanks again to Jim Goebel for joining me.
Thank you.
Until next time, here's a quote from T.S. Eliot. "Half the harm that is done in this world is due to people who want to feel important. They don't mean to do harm, but the harm does not interest them, or they do not see it, or they justify it, because they are absorbed in the endless struggle to think well of themselves." The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 Imported License. Do you want answers to creationist claims against evolution? Would you like to know more about evolution yourself, or even engage creationists more directly, with actual peer-reviewed sources to back you up? My book, How Evolution is Scientific, is designed to show the basics of evolutionary theory and how it is so well supported using the scientific method. It's impeccably sourced, with references to the actual scientific material, and is arranged using the creationists' own criteria of what is scientific. Using their own arguments against them, see how evolution is scientific, but creationism is not.
based on observations, accurate predictions, logic, and evidence. Get answers to common creationist claims and even a primer on abiogenesis, the start of all life. It's all in my book, How Evolution is Scientific, available at Amazon and on Kindle, EPUB, and PDF as well. Get How Evolution is Scientific and never be taken in by creationists again.
Okay, what episode of Mystery Science Theater was that quote from? I'm racking my brain on that one. It must be a Mike episode.
Oh, well, there was two of them. It had a sequel, I remember that, because they kept singing it through the sequel as well. And it was the one where they had the two people named Ken.
Oh, one of the, I know the one you're talking about. Like Star Force or, it's on Shout Factory TV on my Roku box right now. Oh, jeez. And it was
Fugitive
a Joel
Alien.
Episode. Fugitive Alien.
Fugitive Alien.
Fugitive Alien. That's it. Yes, those are Joel episodes, and I just watched them recently, and I'd never seen them before. Oh, man. I pegged the last one last time I was on the show. God, I love that show. They have, if you have a Roku box, Shout Factory TV has 44 episodes for streaming.
Wow. Shout Factory TV.
Yes. You look them up on Facebook. They got a page. They might have more information about it there. I know it's on Roku. I believe it's on the whatever the Apple device is, and I believe it's on the Google Chromecast as well. So,
okay.
Look for that. It's well worth it.